I'm just a autistic engineer that's trying to solve human problems. Most people, I think, have a wrong fundamental understanding of what trauma is. They continued to deploy me for a year and a half, almost 2 years, with a completely blown out back to the point where I could barely walk.
All right, hey guys, welcome back to the studio. Today we have Larry Yatch, retired U.S. Navy SEAL officer, author, speaker, and elite leadership strategist. Welcome to the studio, Larry.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to this.
Yes, sir. It's good to see you again. Last time I saw you was at the Money Is speaking engagement, headed up by Andrew Cordell and Eddie Wilson, who put on the Aspire Tour. So initially, how I found out about you was via the Aspire Tour. After the Aspire Tour, they put on Money Is, and there you were up on stage giving this amazing speaking engagement and sharing your story.
Yeah, it's I've been working with them for going on about 3 years now when it comes to Aspire and Money Is and all the stuff that we do there. And before that, I was working with Andrew on a personal level for about 2 years through kind of his journey through the work that I do.
That's awesome. And Andrew's got a great story too. Andrew's got a great personality. I'd love to get him on the podcast. He's a riot.
Oh, he's hilarious. Yes. I agree.
Yeah. So you guys have a pretty good connection. And man, like I said, you gave a pretty powerful speech up there on stage sharing your story. I remember pictures of you falling out, jumping out of planes, and you know, your life's purpose is taking down bullies at all costs, joining the Navy.
Yeah, it was from all the way. I would have been about seventh grade was when I found out about the SEALs. It would have been kind of late 80s, so back late 80s, early 90s, there wasn't hardly any information about the Navy SEALs out there. And originally, I wanted to be a fighter pilot because I saw Top Gun in third grade, and that was it. But once I found out about the SEALs, I was hooked.
Yeah, awesome. Now, you had a life-altering experience that changed the trajectory of your career.
Yeah, in the SEALs. So I went to the Naval Academy, got my commission as an officer, and then went straight into the SEAL training program in what would have been the fall of 1998. And then graduated in 1999 after 6 months of BUDS, and chose to go to SEAL Team 3, which was responsible for the Middle East at the time. And so what would have been 99, there wasn't hardly anything going on, but I figured if there was anything exciting to happen as a SEAL, it was going to be in the Middle East. So I wanted to be right in the middle of it. And from my very first deployment to when I got injured and medically retired, it was full speed ahead, combat operations from day one. And eventually I got a career-ending injury. I blew out my back as well as my knee, shoulder, kind of full gamut. And eventually there was a back surgery that went badly. So they were doing a fusion and the surgeon nicked my L4, L5 nerve root, which then caused my right leg to go numb. I couldn't feel anything. And that's what ended my SEAL career. So after another year and a half worth of additional surgeries and rehab, they medically retired me in 2008.
Yeah, that's a rough go. I know I've experienced back injuries myself before, and I was reading in your book here, amazing book, by the way. That's just the start here for you. I know that. And I was reading that. A portion of it that covered medications and alcohol and going through that. And I went through that myself. You didn't have feeling in your leg. And I know that's a dark journey and it can keep you down. It keeps you from your purpose. It keeps you from your mission, and it can just take everything right out of you. What were some of the modalities that you used to help you get over that hurdle?
It was a mess. Like, the longer story is a lot more, I don't know, negative, if you will. Like, it was rough because when I got injured, it was 2004. We were right in the middle of it when it came to Iraq, Afghanistan, all that stuff. So they continued to deploy me for a year and a half, almost 2 years, with a completely blown out back to the point where I could barely walk. I was in a wheelchair before I went into that surgery. And all they do is medicate me, right? Give me more drugs to keep me on the battlefield. And so by the time I actually had surgery, that I was on my corpsman. So corpsmen in the Navy or the SEALs are the guys that like do the trauma medicine for us.
Yeah.
And he came to visit me in the hospital prior to surgery, and he's looking through my chart, if you will, and he's looking at the doses that they were giving me of morphine, and he was shocked. They were giving me the same dose he would give me if I was gunshot for 45 days straight. And you shouldn't be on that for more than 3 days.
Yeah.
Like it was before that, it was, you know, 5, 6, 7 Vicodin a day. And then eventually that doesn't even touch it, the pain. So it was that with alcohol. So then where it gets really bad is they do the surgery. The surgeon nicks the nerve root. I wake up, it feels like there's boiling oil being poured down my leg because the nerve's dying. And they never looked at my record. So a day after surgery, they took me off all narcotics cold turkey, just like they would if you hadn't been on anything. So I went into massive narcotic withdrawal. And it took 4 days before we could get anyone at the hospital to recognize what I was doing, like full on convulsions. I didn't sleep for 4 days straight. Like it was a mess. And then when they finally figured out, holy shit, we're almost killed this guy by mismedication. It was like 90 days of getting weaned off the drugs. And then another year and a half of withdrawal symptoms from all that stuff. I mean, it was a mess.
It's crazy. And I've been down that road before too. I didn't have the severe injury that you had, but I did have a back injury. And I remember, I don't take pills, but when my back would go out, I used to work with young men with intermittent explosive disorder, and they would, they would become volatile. And they were a group of young men that had experienced trauma, and sometimes they would have bad days, and I was trying to, I'd be trying to de-escalate somebody, but oftentimes they got physical. Yeah. I ended up with various back injuries at different times, and I had to be in severe pain to take those pills. And sometimes I had to, and I just remember my doctor prescribing me bottles like this big, and they were huge. And then, you know what goes better with a Vicodin? A beer. And I went down that road. And then, now I just don't do that anymore. Like if I have a back injury, I have all my holistic modalities that I go towards, but this was years ago, that happened. And, in that I started paying attention to how the doctor was prescribing it. And I'm like, oh my God, this is a whole hamster wheel and a downward spiral.
Horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the worst for me prior to surgery was not sleeping. I was in so much pain, I couldn't sleep. And I'd gone months without sleeping more than 15, 20 minutes at a time. And I eventually just turned into a zombie. And then they give you more drugs to try and have you sleep. And then, I remember a time just sitting, staring at the computer, drooling almost because it's so out of it because of all the drugs.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I used to have to sleep on a wood plank. I would have to put a huge slab of wood on my bed so I could attempt to sleep. And that didn't help much either. But yeah. And then working in the mental health field for as long as I have, I've seen so many people over-medicated to the point where they're zombies and they're drooling. It's quite sad. And it's a hard road to travel down. I got to commend you for getting through that. Those are some pretty dark days.
I agree. Yeah. It was a tough journey, but once I started understanding how the side effects and complications that the drugs continue to give me. So after the surgery, I won't touch opiates at all. I mean, you get an opiate near me and I have almost instant withdrawal symptoms. So I think based on my self-regulation, my discipline, it was quite easy for me to suffer through getting off those things, which a lot of people have a really hard time doing. But then they prescribed because I had the horrible nerve pain from the surgeon's error, they prescribed an antidepressant and an anti-seizure drug to help with nerve pain. but I didn't have seizures or depression. And so by being on that for 2.5, 3 years, when I finally weaned myself off of those things, now I'm dealing with depression because my body is all screwed up from taking a drug I didn't need for multiple years.
Yeah. Yes, I know. I experienced the depression myself when I was down. It's dark. It's so hard to get out of that. Yeah. And you're just waiting to heal. You're waiting to heal your body. I found my way to so many different modalities like sauna and cold therapy. And I bought a TENS unit.
Nice. Yeah.
Yes. All kinds of modalities were better than medications for me. Yeah, that's just such a dark road. And you've got two boys, don't you?
I do. I have an 8-year-old and an 11-year-old, two boys.
Wow. How's it going with the boys?
Good. They're doing good. They're, you know, growing up fast, as everyone says. So it's, to me at least as a dad, as they get older and older, they get to be my little buddies. Like, we get to do adventures together. And so I just continue to have more and more fun with them. I would also, I have to admit, they're kind of my R&D department. So I do so much work with behavior change for people that I definitely use them as my test subjects on a lot of stuff. It's fun to be able to be an older father, right? I had kids older than most. And with all the experience I have in both leadership from the perspective of the SEALs and then behavior change with what I've done for the last 15 years, to be able to parent with that as a series of tools is pretty, I don't know, I feel fortunate that I can be so present and educated in my parenting.
Yeah, I think smart move later in life. I think that's the way to go, really. Now, you're working with a lot of folks who are experiencing trauma also.
Yeah, it's a very interesting cross-section of how I got there. So from the personal perspective, just like any good SEAL would do, you know, when I experienced all that trauma, both from combat, from the hospital, all that stuff, I did what any good SEAL would do and just bury that as deep as I could possibly bury it, never touch it, and ultimately hid it behind starting businesses. So I started my first company out of Bethesda Naval Hospital when I was laying there, and tried to distract myself from it, from the pain, the suffering that I was going through. And it didn't work very well, right? Like, I was able to produce success in businesses, but my life sucked and it just kept getting worse and worse. So about 6 years now, 6-7 years ago is when I started the journey of healing. Like, my really, on the outside, anyone would point at me and say, look how successful this guy is. But when it came to how I felt on the inside, as well as my experience of life, it was the worst it had ever been. And being able to be confronted with that and decide to do something about it was a very important step for me. And I think the first kind of programs I went through, I started to see some hope that the change was possible. And as soon as I saw that, I was all in. So I spent about 3-4 years focusing on my own healing. I dove into it like I dive into anything. Like, as soon as I saw there was some good here, like you were saying with all the modalities, I was the same way with my physical healing. I did the same thing on my psychological side of any program, anything that I could go to that might help. And as I was doing those things, I have a very structured, process-oriented brain I'm on the autistic spectrum, and that's one of the gifts that I have from that is I see patterns in everything. And I started to see patterns in trauma from my own trauma and those that I was around. And so that was really the start of my exploration into the fundamental structure of how trauma exists in people's lives.
Yeah, I can definitely appreciate that. And same, not only with the physical modalities, but the mental modalities too for myself. And that's what I also work with folks on the autism spectrum. That's what I've been doing for 28, close to 30 years now. And I founded my nonprofit in 2016. And I work with a lot of younger folks on the autism spectrum and experimenting with different modalities, working with the families. I think, you know, I'm always so blessed and happy to work with a family that's open to trying new things.
Yeah.
And it's such a game changer for people and different people, you know, different strokes for different folks, different people respond differently to different modalities.
Yeah.
And I think that as long as you're open to experimentation and seeing what works for you, that's a game changer, you know?
I agree. And like for me, back in late 70s, early 80s, like autism wasn't a thing. And I was just a weird kid, right? That no one understood. And that I felt very isolated by not my limitation with my autism is not understanding or being able to sense what people are feeling. And so that makes it very difficult to make connections with people. And so people became very scary. And hence the become a Navy SEAL. Maybe if I'm strong and like a SEAL, I won't have to be scared of everyone. And that limitation was a challenge throughout most of my life because no one knew. Like it wasn't clear. I was just weird. And when it came to my boys, my oldest son, it followed me down that same Asperger's path. And within that piece, because I understand what it is and how it works and where there are limitations and where he has gifts, I'm able to help him navigate the world through that lens. And I think what you do and other people do is would have been such just for me when I finally recognized what made me different. It gave me the opportunity to give myself a lot more grace for the things that I have challenges with, as well as to help me leverage the skills that come with it. So I know I'm grateful for people like you that provide that for kids, for people that are suffering from those things.
Well, thank you very much. And I think that your son's so blessed to have you and vice versa, and you to have him. And he's very fortunate to have somebody that understands him and can help him explore and share his gifts with the world. I think it's amazing.
Yeah, it's cool to see. And so I was spending all this time on my personal journey for healing, and I started to see patterns in trauma and how the trauma showed up in people's lives. And my approach to it has always been through language, through linguistic patterns. And while I was over working with mostly combat veterans, people with severe post-traumatic stress from very obvious reasons, on the other side of my life, my professional life, I'm running a relatively large company doing business consulting with big companies. Like we were working with quite large companies, you know, billion-dollar companies. And my job would be to work in those organizations to help them coordinate action at a better level. And we would get throughout the entire organization and we'd make all sorts of big changes and the companies would start doing well. And then inevitably, when they really started to hum along, the CEO would make stupid choices that derailed all the progress we were making. And it didn't make sense because they were illogical choices. And as I would work with the CEOs and ask questions into why they were making these choices, I started to recognize that they were using the same linguistic patterns as combat veterans, but none of them had experienced combat. And that was a huge turning point for me because I couldn't deny that they were using the same linguistic patterns, the same thought patterns, and they were making the same illogical decisions as someone that had experienced significant trauma in their lives. And that turning point of saying, oh, wait a minute, when it comes to high performance, significant trauma has to exist in people's lives. And being able to see that is where I crossed the worlds together, where I started to leverage trauma mitigation practices with high performing individuals, which just unlocked both their experience in life and their performance.
That's fascinating. That's exceptional. Wow. What are some of the trauma modalities that you use in working with some of these folks?
So, like I said, my primary system, like I'm probably the opposite of you. I have zero training. I'm not, you know, I haven't gone through any sort of professional certification. I'm just a autistic engineer that's trying to solve human problems. And the way that I look at trauma is a bit different than I think the traditional way. So for me, it really starts with a foundation of what is trauma. And most people, I think, have a wrong fundamental understanding of what trauma is. So most people, when I say trauma, or we say trauma, think about the experience that they went through. So for me, going through a firefight, right? We could say that the trauma that I experienced was the firefight. But where that falls under or falls apart is, if I would have died in the firefight, would I have any trauma? And the answer is no, right? So how could it be that the firefight causes trauma if I could experience a firefight, but in death, I don't experience trauma? So what I realized is that trauma is not connected to the experience. It's connected to survival of the experience. If you don't survive, you don't have trauma. And that changed my perspective completely in saying that all trauma is rooted in survival, not the experience. And all trauma is the lesson of survival that our subconscious takes on. And then the question begs, well, is that a good lesson or a bad lesson? And that's a kind of a trick question, right? It's an effective lesson if the environment stays the same. So the environment, I learned the trauma, right? So if I was in firefight after firefight and I survived all those firefights, that's going to teach me some lessons. Those lessons are going to be extremely effective for survival as long as I stay in the same environment, but they're not effective in other environments, which causes me to then live in a untruth, right? What was true in the wartime environment is not true at home with my family, but I live in that untruth anyway. And when I live in that untruth, I create stress in my life because I'm seeing, thinking, and acting in my world through the wrong lens. That's post-traumatic stress. So post-traumatic stress is just the stress caused by surviving an experience where my perception of control is taking away and using a lesson that is no longer applicable to try to stay alive or survive, which just creates the stress in the first place.
That makes perfect sense. And it's just a matter of carrying the experience with you and not processing and healing from it. I get that.
Yeah. And it's even more than carrying the experience, it's carrying the strategy of survival the experience gave you. Like, that's the key part, right? We survive, we go through these experiences of a perceived loss of control, right? Rape, cancer, physical attack, war. What makes those all the same is that in each one of those environments, our perception of control is taken away. And as long as we survive it, our subconscious learns lessons and it reinforces those lessons throughout our life. And those lessons operate below the surface of our awareness. And so we aren't even aware that we're acting based on a set of rules that was built in our worst experiences in life. And so when we act in connection to those rules, we create stress.
Absolutely. I've been guilty of creating my own stress over the years, and I've been on my own healing journey. And so yeah. I actually just went on a retreat. I went to the Balanced Man retreat, and
okay.
I found some peace. You know, I'm always seeking peace. And I think a lot of us are carrying trauma throughout life and we don't even realize that we haven't processed it. And as I've gotten older and along with more experience in life, it always reveals itself later down the road where I might think I have processed something and I haven't processed it. I've actually just tucked it away. And then it reveals itself later down the road. It's always there waiting for you to process at a later date. And so, you know, you get to unpack those things. And it's one of the things that I enjoy most about getting a little bit older, is that you get a little bit smarter, a little wiser, yep. and you know how to handle things with a different perspective. And I've definitely gone down the road of personal and professional development over the past several years, over the past 10 years, I've taken it quite seriously. And those are the things that, those are the experiences that lead me to events like the Aspire Tour and Money Is, where I get to meet people like you. And you're so brave to get up there and share that story on stage. And you just rocked it up there, and it was pretty powerful. And I think that the folks that you're working with are just lucky to have you, and vice versa, because it's like the folks that you work with become your greatest mentors.
Yep.
Yeah. And vice versa.
Yeah, you spend time with them. Yeah. You know, and that, to me, it's, I feel fortunate to be able to work with very successful people. And more importantly, to be able to be instrumental in their unlocking of their potential, as well as to allow them to create the experience of life that they want. Because I think one of the biggest problems of trauma staying in our life is that it's only effective in certain environments. And that means that we will, on a subconscious level, recreate the same environments in which we were traumatized so that we have the tools to work in it, right? Because we learn the tool in that trauma, and now that tool is only useful in that type of environment. So we constantly recreate the same traumatic environment. And within that piece, until we start bringing it into our awareness, it's very hard to change it. And that's why those CEOs, right? The CEOs, the company started taking off. They're about to have everything they ever wanted, a company that's running really smooth, time, money, success. And their subconscious has to sabotage it, because the rules that run their subconscious don't work in that environment. They don't work in the penthouse. They only work in the basement. So right. They'll self-sabotage just so they can rebuild, because they know that they're only skilled in the building phase, not the success phase. And we see that in everyone's life.
That's amazing. Now, do you still have the same business partner? You have there's a great picture of you in the book with your business partner. You're in the hospital in Bethesda.
Yeah, no, we split ways when I went with Aspire. So she still does her own work in the same field, but we don't work together anymore.
Got it. Okay. How many companies are you running yourself?
Myself, I'm running two right now, which is probably the least I've run, which I'm very happy. But I think I'm about to start a third, so we'll see.
Three is the magic number. Yes.
Yeah, it's good.
Now, what's cooking for the third one? Like,
so it's been really fun. The work that I've done with trauma has always been based on high performers, right? So people that would not self-identify as having experienced trauma, most of them, right? And all of them are what would be considered by society to be very successful. Right? Successful people. That's where I've spent most of my time. And I've been working, I'll work with them in a holistic way, right? Where I'm working on all aspects of their life, all aspects of how trauma has impacted their life. Andrew's one of my business partners, runs the Money Is stuff, Aspire, all that stuff. He challenged me to see if I could unwind financial trauma. So trauma specific to our financial worlds, lessons that we've learned in surviving challenging financial environments that create these subconscious rules that guarantee we never create the financial future or the financial freedom that we want. And so I've been spending the last 6 months building programs specifically designed to help people identify where financial trauma lives in their life, how it's restricting them from where they want to go, and then fixing it.
That's amazing. And I had some of the bullet points for the Money Is engagement that I attended. It was financial education and wealth building, business growth and exit strategies, networking and inspiration, practical strategies for implementation, and focus on mindset and purpose. And what a great event, you know, financial literacy for people, very important.
Yeah, so we've been, like, what's cool about it is we've been working that on two sides. We identify that financial IQ, like your knowledge around finances, investing, things of that nature, will determine how much money you have in your bank account. The higher your financial IQ, the more money you have in your bank account. But what I've found with working with, at this point, three billionaires, the amount of money in your bank account does not necessarily equate to feeling safe, secure, happy, fulfilled with your life. And so you can be extremely high on financial IQ, have a whole bunch of money, and still never live in the financial environment that you want. And that's where we've been building these programs around financial EQ. So you've got the intelligence quotient side of it, which increases your bank account. And then the EQ side, the emotional quotient side of it, is being able to understand and manage your emotions, your feelings around finances and money, which ultimately creates the life that you want. And so we work on both sides of it, both the structural side of it and the emotional side of it.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And I've seen you in action. There was a story you shared about after you got off stage, we chatted. That's when I got to actually meet you. And you had shared the story about your Porsche.
Yeah.
Will you share the story about your Porsche?
Oh, yeah. So I've got a new one now. So this is, you know, the story ended happy, but this is a good illustration of how trauma lives in someone's life, right? And how the subconscious will recreate the same environments in which we built or learned our trauma. So for me, in all the war of firefights, all the horrible things I went through, I learned a couple rules and I can now put them into words. So the first rule I learned was that everything goes to shit. Like you just have to wait and it's going to go bad. And what's interesting about those words is, for me, it's everything will go to shit. It's not everything is shit. Right. Some people live in that, but for me, it will be. So there's always this looming sense of impending doom was one of my rules. And as a SEAL, that was true. Like every time we went anywhere, someone tried to shoot us. So it was just a matter of time before it went bad. The second thing I learned was that if anything goes wrong, people I love are going to be hurt. So as a SEAL, very true. Right. The smallest little mistake results in someone dying. It wasn't like you could make a mistake and there's no consequence to it. And so on one hand, you've got everything's going to go bad. The next step of it is if it goes bad, everyone I love is going to get hurt. And then the last part of the rules for me was that it was all my fault. And being an officer, I was responsible for the planning, the tactical leadership. So it follows that everything's going to go bad. When it goes bad, people I care about are going to get hurt. And it's all my fault. And so those rules are very well established in my subconscious. So that means that I can't live in an environment where things are going well, because those rules don't work, right? It's incompatible with that. And so when I get things that I want, or I produce environments that I want, I have to, on a subconscious level, sabotage those things to create an environment of things about to go bad. If there are any business owners out there, this one might resonate with you. For me, I was 2 weeks from being broke throughout my entire business career. Like I never went broke. I never missed payroll, but I was 2 weeks from not having enough money. Didn't matter if I made $1 million a month or if I made $10 a month. And that is a living out of my everything's about to go to crap. Because I work best under stress, under risk, or at least that's what my subconscious thinks. And I can't have what I want, right? Like if I have something I really want, well, that means that it went well. And it can't go well for me, right? It's always got to go bad. And so I've always loved cars. I wanted a Porsche. That was how I knew a Porsche, a beautiful new Porsche. I knew that was going to be when I was successful in business. And I get to a point where I can buy one. I bought one, had it for 7-8 months, crashed it at 7 miles an hour, totaled it. 7 miles an hour, like not even going fast. And within that, I had to move it. And I lived in Minnesota and I had to move it from my house to another person's house in November. And there's 2 inches of snow. So I'm going 7 miles an hour down the road. It went sideways, slid down a hill, hit a curb. It was totaled. And in that moment, I realized that inevitable that that car wouldn't be in my life because I never felt like I'd earned it. I wasn't worth having it. I was embarrassed that I would be embarrassed to drive it around. And so, because it's a sign that things have gone well for me, and my subconscious won't let that be true.
That was such a fascinating story because I shared with you after you got off stage that I had went. So same thing. I wanted a silver Porsche. And yeah. When I had made some money, I went to the Porsche dealership with a friend of mine. And I had picked out the Porsche, the interior, everything. And then I did not pull the trigger on it. For some odd reason, I had thought, you know what? I don't think I did the test drive. I did all the things. And I thought I was going to take that home. And then I just made the decision not to do it. I just didn't feel like I needed it at that time. And then I waited a few years later. I bought a Mustang 66 Fastback, 351 Cleveland. And maybe the Porsche will happen. That's still a dream car of mine.
Oh, yeah.
It's got to be silver, the whole nine. Now, you've got a new Porsche now?
Yeah, so I got a new one. It's black on black on black. So black car, black wheels, black interior. And the coolest part about it is it's a manual. So it's a 7-speed manual, which is just a blast to drive. Like so much fun to drive.
And now you're...
In this one, I'm not crashing.
I was going to say, you realize you deserve it.
Yeah, I feel worthy of it. Like, I drive it to the grocery store. Like, it's so funny how the healing of the traumas enable a different life, right? At this point in my life, it's as good as it's ever been. Like, from my relationship to my relationship with my boys, business, money, how I live, what I live with. And that's just a mechanism of solving that trauma, right? Rewiring that no longer is everything going to go horrible. Everyone I love is going to be hurt. It's all my fault. You know, in this place, in the place I live now, I live in a completely different world. Like those things are no longer true, which enables me to live in a world where I have worth, to live in a world where every experience I had is a gift as opposed to a curse. To live in a world where when I get to be myself, I attract the people that I can help, I can be of purpose to.
Yep, I love that. And I relate so much to everything you say because I had the same experience. And it's funny because I get in that Mustang and I call it like the mental health Mustang because I feel differently when I'm driving that car. Not about showing it off or anything like that. It's not about that. It's just a sense of calm. There's something about taking a ride, you know, in your car and the car that you've earned and that that you feel worthy of. I get exactly what you're saying. It has absolutely nothing to do with the thing. It's more about me.
Yeah, completely. And to me, what's amazing is if you hadn't done the work that you've done on yourself over the last number of years, as you said, that car wouldn't exist in your life, right? The car is a byproduct of the healing. Like there is no, like, I'm a great example of, I was so successful. I was able to buy the car, even though I was unhealthy, but the car couldn't stay in my life. Right. Like it had to get out of my life. And so it's the same thing with businesses, relationships, right? If you don't heal your traumas, the great things that you've always wanted in your life will never be able to, you won't be able to keep them if you can even have them in the first place.
Absolutely. And the laws of attraction. Yes, I get it. Now, would you say in your line of work, working with folks experiencing trauma, are you working with a lot of SEAL team guys?
No, for me, instead of going through the route of, let's call it the traditionally traumatized people, right? People that had experienced traditional trauma, I've worked just on the very high end, high functioning end. So it's mostly executives are kind of my core audience, a number of professional athletes, a number of doctors, surgeons. Like it's really people that wouldn't themselves identify as having experienced trauma and others would not point at and say, yeah, that guy's traumatized. But what I've found is that there is a direct tie between high performance in any domain and unresolved trauma in your life. And the tie is that to be a very high performer in any domain, sports, business, medicine, it doesn't make a difference. You have to have drive and perseverance greater than the average person. And those for every person I've worked with, the gift of perseverance and drive has come from some horrible experience early in their life. And so I've not yet found a super high functioning person, a high performing person that doesn't live with an anchor of trauma around their ankle. And what's crazy is when we look at them, they look successful, right? They have all the numbers, they have the life, but they don't get to experience their success based on the traumas that are driving them. So I always explain it from the story of Superman. So Superman, how did he become Superman? He left Krypton, right? As a little baby, his parents put him in the spaceship and sent him off. Why'd they send him off? Because the planet was going to die, right? The entire planet blew up. So the only reason Superman is Superman is because he's on Earth. The only reason he's on Earth is because of the greatest trauma in his life, his entire planet being destroyed. So Superman's superpowers comes from his traumas. Now, what's interesting is what makes Superman weak? Kryptonite, right? The only thing that can make Superman weak is kryptonite. What is kryptonite but a piece of his home planet? So his biggest weakness comes from his traumas as well. And that's the exact same thing for humans, right? Our most, what makes us strong, what makes us successful, what makes us our strengths comes from our traumas. And every limitation we have comes from our traumas. It's both are rooted in it.
So true. And the work that you're doing, would you say now, do you find that you're helping reduce stigma in men processing trauma and talking about it?
For sure. Both. Because I deal, since I'm mostly dealing with high functioning people, like the women I deal with are all powerhouses too, right? Yeah. Like they are, you know, they are bigger ass kickers than the men.
Right.
And in the end, all of them don't raise their hand and say, I experienced trauma, right? So that whole stigma around trauma, and that we have experienced things that in our lives that we had this perceived loss of control around, which caused us to have to survive. And when we survive, we have these lessons. Just to have these very successful people live in the knowledge that they have these traumas, these strategies that they've carried forward, that did give them success, but also keep them from experiencing life in the way they want and limit their performance. To me, it's one of the greatest things, is they get to be a lighthouse in front of all the people they work with to show them that it's okay to admit that there were times in my life where I went through hard things. There may be strategies I carried forward that no longer serve me, and that being able to be connected, both internally connected, being connected to others, and being connected to all that's greater than us, is the ultimate cure for our trauma.
Wow. I can relate to everything you say. And I think it's just, you're just doing amazing work. And that's a great point that you make, is that trauma is really just a universal experience that I think everyone's carrying with. And, you know, it's true for both sexes. And I think it's great that your practice is universal, and you're breaking down stigmas for just powerhouses in general sharing, because a lot of people in leadership think it's a bad look to share. But I think I think it's more important to be vulnerable with your team so they can see that side, so you can help further everybody along.
Well, it's one of the connection to me, if you look at it from a fundamental perspective, is the degree of influence two things have on each other, right? So the greater that you have influence on something, the stronger the connection you have to it. Like I always give the example in cars, right? A 1970s farm truck that has been beat all to hell, you can move the steering wheel 2 inches either direction, the tires don't go anywhere, right? So the actual influence that you have over the tires is relatively limited. The feel of what the car's truck's going over to the steering wheel is very limited, right? So your connection is small. If you get that brand new Porsche, it's a whole different story, right? You feel every little pebble in the road, because the degree of influence, the connection I have between my hands and the tires are very, very tight. And so humans are the same thing. Like the connection that I have to someone is dependent upon the influence we have over each other. The stronger, the more influence we have over each other, the stronger connection. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's good, right? Like I can have a strong connection with someone that has a very negative influence in my life, but there is still a strong connection there.
Yes.
And what I've found is that connection for humans is a formula. It is authenticity, vulnerability, and unearned trust. And so that vulnerability piece that you mentioned is not only important for, let's say, knocking down the stigmas, but it actually creates connection between, say, the leaders and the people around them. Or like for me, you know, my boys, I talk openly about my traumas. I talk openly about my limitations, the struggles I've had, because that authenticity and vulnerability is what increases my influence over them. It increases my connection with them.
You are doing amazing work, sir. Amazing.
Thank
you. I love it. Yes.
Yeah.
What engagements are coming up? Are you speaking anywhere soon?
I'll be speaking at the next, they call it Aspire Wealth now in Dallas. I'll be speaking there in a couple weeks. I think it's next weekend, the weekend after that. And then, my biggest project is I've been diving really deep into, technology, AI. And one of the coolest things that I've been working on is one of my limitations as a human is my ability to do one-on-one work with people. Like I just can't do, I have limited hours in the day.
Yeah.
And so I've been training in AI on my entire knowledge base so that I can do one-on-one coaching, like true conversational coaching through artificial intelligence. And so I've been building a AI twin of myself based on, I've got almost 1.5 million words of my content between either the stuff I've written, course content, podcasts, interviews, speeches that I've trained this model on. And so it's been really cool to be able to see something that can answer challenges on a very deep level with people that I don't have to do directly. All the way to the point of about 3 weeks ago, I got into a big challenge with my ex-wife. And I was just stuck. And I'm not usually stuck. Like I've gotten to a point now where it's pretty quick, but yeah. I was like staying into it. So I called myself. Like you can call this AI and talk to it. And it talks in my voice. So I called it and it was the weirdest thing. I'm having a conversation with myself about my problems, my individual stuck spot. And it's funny because I would say something, it asked me a question. And I'd answer, and I know what it's going to say, and it, you know, it says it to me, but I don't want to hear it because I got the emotional charge going on based on what I'm doing, and then talk through it. And at the end, I'm like 20 minutes, like talking to myself, right? But at least I'm not talking to myself by myself. At least I'm talking to something. 20 minutes, I hung up. I'm like, holy crap, I feel better. I had a strategy for what to do next, all based on myself. Like my same content. So to me, that's one of the things I'm most excited about is the opportunity to reach more people at significantly lower costs through technology.
That's huge. Oh my God. Yeah. Congratulations on that. And now we're going to have a Larry Yatch hologram where we can just hologram you on stage around the world.
Yep. Yeah, it's been do you have kids?
I do not. I have a godson. He's 10 years old. He has Down syndrome. He's amazing.
So with this, so my boys are 8 and 10. My dad is just turned 80, and he suffered a traumatic brain injury years ago and then a stroke. And so he has, for the last 15 years, he's had significant issues creating short-term memories. And then as he's gotten older, it's gotten worse. And what's interesting is, you know, I've really lost my dad 10 years ago. Yeah. Like, you know, I can't have a conversation with him. I can't ask him for advice. Luckily, because it's short-term memory, we can still interact, but he's not my same dad, right? That I would love to talk to. I've been doing the same, building a same model. So taking this full knowledge base, putting it into this AI, I can tune it for the boys. So I can tune it for an 8-year-old and 11-year-old. I can give them give it personal information. Within about 6 months, it'll have video, full video, like me. So it'll look like me, talking like me. And I thought about the fact that they will always have the ability to get advice from me, regardless of I'm here or not. And with this, I can actually give them the opportunity to talk to me without their having to worry about my judgment, because it's the AI. And so wow. To me, one of the cool gifts that the technology is providing is I'll be able to make sure that they'll always have access to their dad, regardless of where I am, what I do. So I think that's really neat.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Now, will that be like via an app?
Yeah, right now it's app-based and, you know, web-based or on the phone. Like all the way to the point I've been programming it that it can call you back. So like if I talk to it and it's like gave me the, we came to agreement as to what I'm going to do next, it can call me back in a week and ask me if I did it or not, because it'll remember.
Wow,
and
it'll then, have the follow-up.
Yeah, it'll like, hey, did you do what we talked about?
Accountability.
And if I say, no, I didn't do it, well, then it can coach me into, well, why let's talk about why you didn't do it and get you past it. So, yeah, the technology's going quick.
Wow, that's fascinating. You know, I've been working on processing some trauma also regarding my brother's death. He died of a drug overdose some years back, and I'm writing about it right now. And I'm trying to play an experiment with AI right now, kind of along the lines of what you're talking about, talking to myself, and it feels weird because yeah. But I'm doing it. I'm trying, you know, because I find it also helpful, and it's just a new experience. And also too, it's just, I'm reprocessing everything again and it's bringing up a lot of old details, and it is therapeutic, but it's a very emotional process. And, but it's a new facet with this AI. It's a game changer.
Well, I'll give you access to AI, Larry, and I'd love to see your thoughts, like he is very well educated and tuned on the trauma stuff. I'd love to hear your thoughts. And
oh, I would love it.
Even that, like if it'd be any use to your audience, I can put together a link where they could have access to it. I'd just love the opportunity for more people to get the ability to learn and the ability to, you know, I know, at least I feel from what I know of you so far and what we talked about, you've put a whole life into creating processes, systems to help people out. And I would imagine, like me, all you want to do is have the most people possible get that benefit. And yes. So this is one of my efforts to do that. But if that'd be of any use to your audience, I'll put something together for you.
It absolutely would be. It'd be an honor. I would love that. That's huge. Thank you so much. Now, what are some of the links where people can find you at?
True Path Mastery. So it's TRU Path Mastery is my company that works on all the trauma stuff, financial trauma, the general trauma. SEAL Team Leaders is the corporate consulting business. And then when it comes to Aspire, I think it's Aspire Tour is the big tour. You won't see me on the front end of that, but I'm very involved in the community on the back end. And then social media, I don't do hardly any. So I don't look at any social media or news, but my girlfriend has made a Instagram channel called, it's Larry Does Cool Shit. And it's all about the adventures I go on. So that's about the only social media of any use.
I love it because Larry does do cool shit.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Especially on that thing. Yeah, I got... one of my favorite things to do is experience exciting, challenging physical activities in the world. And so if you can get hurt doing it, I've probably done it and halfway decent at it.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love it. I try to stay away from news and social media as much as possible too, but I got to have the social media for business and connections and all of those things. But I'm very limited as far as the rest of it goes. And I have to say the Aspire Tour is a fantastic event. I've actually been to Aspire I want to say three times.
That's awesome.
And just because it's not the same speakers every time.
Yeah.
There's always someone new and exciting coming into the mix, and sometimes repeat guests. David Goggins was there one of the years. That was awesome. It was fantastic. And Josh Luber, he was there one year. He's from Detroit here. And oh my gosh, yeah, just such an amazing event. And ultimately, Money Is also event are a great event. Are any Money Is events coming up?
I know, because and what's cool, we've mostly been restricted to really big cities, right? Like Dallas, Denver, you know, big cities. I know starting in January, probably, we're going to start doing two a month, and we're going to be able to go to smaller cities, which I think is really cool.
Cool.
Like, I know we, in the next couple months, we got Dallas. I think Austin might be in there. Minneapolis, St. Paul is going to be a cool one. I worked out of there for quite a while. DC area is going to be another one. So I think those are kind of the, I'm pretty sure there's six before the end of the year. Those are at least four of them.
Awesome.
I agree with you. I mean, the value you get is we bring in big people for a small ticket price. Like, you're getting really, really good speakers at each one of these events for that day. It's definitely a good day. And then I can't say enough about the Money Is or Spire Well stuff. To me, coming out of the Navy, my dad grew up with nothing. Like, I had no financial background, no financial education. And the change in my life, just kind of doing what we teach, and that my financial world's completely different now, just by being able to understand about finances, investing, retirement, how to mitigate taxes. Like, I can't say enough about that. And it really doesn't matter what level you're at, to structure it well and to understand the ins and outs of it, but more importantly, to have access to a community for opportunities for investment, for opportunities for real estate. Like, it really is amazing. Like, I can't say enough for that, about that side of what we do.
It was a fantastic event, and just the human connection, it was fantastic. And I treated my a friend of mine, my jiu-jitsu instructor, actually, I treated him to join me at the Money Is event, because I know he's always looking for personal and professional development, and one of his dreams is to start his own gym, and always looking to pay it forward to somebody if I can. And that was awesome to be able to treat someone. Usually if I go to an event, I also brought my at the time assistant, Maria, to the Aspire tour.
Okay.
She absolutely loved it. I always treat somebody when I go, if I can, if I can bring someone along, and I'm always looking to inspire somebody at one of these events. And yeah, man, I can't tell you enough how much those events, like, definitely make an impact. And anytime I go to one of those two, I leave with connections that I've stayed in touch with, so that's priceless, you know.
Yeah, that's one of the coolest part. I've been a part of a lot of different communities, masterminds, business groups, and the group that we've built in this Aspire community is some of the best people I've ever been around. I'm not necessarily sure. I think if I had to guess, why is that the case? Like, the amount of work that I've done on myself is huge. Like, the other big players in this company have all gone through the same trauma work. And I think being able to shed the untruths that you've lived in your life and live in truth and alignment attracts others that like the same thing. And I think that's why our community ends up being so amazing.
Yeah, like attracts like. And I gotta plug the team for Aspire Tour and Money Is. That team is just five stars. All that staff, that group of folks, oh, holy smokes, they're all just great, great people.
Yeah, the experience, that's one of Andrew's big tenets, is the experience has to be top notch. And he puts so much thought, effort, time, money into making sure that when you have an experience with us, you always leave thinking that's amazing.
Absolutely. You know, Andrew and Eddie are just great folks, great to engage with. And I can't remember Andrew's assistant's name off the top of my head, but he is a great guy too. And that was actually Andrew's, I think, his high school best friend.
Oh, Mike.
Yes.
Yeah, Mike.
Yeah.
Not high school. They met the first day of kindergarten.
Kindergarten, yeah.
Yeah, they walked in and like we're walking in at the same time, like, hey, you want to be my friend? And they've been friends ever since. Yeah.
Yes. That was a great story too, because he gets up on stage and kind of MCs. Yeah. I'd love to get him on my podcast because he's got a great personality and I'm sure he's got amazing stories to share and just kind of finding.
Oh, Mike, I'll connect you with Mike. No problem.
That would be amazing. Yeah. Because he had a story too, like coming back into connection with Andrew and kind of that was a really inspiring story. I don't want to give too much away because I want to have him on the podcast. But I kept thinking, I'm like, how would I ever get in touch with that guy? But I, you know what I mean? I crossed paths with him a couple times at the events and then like it gets away from me because there's always so much going on.
I got you. I got your back, buddy.
Perfect. I love it. Man, Larry, I didn't think I could have got much more inspired from the last time I saw you speak. But man, I'm feeling even more so today. Thank you so much for joining me in the studio. It's been awesome.
Oh, my pleasure. Like I said, thank you for what you do. You know, I know how much it would have meant my life early on as a kid. And just from what I could tell from what we're talking about, you put a ton of effort and thought into it and work. So I appreciate that for sure.
Well, thank you very much. And right back at you, you're doing amazing work. And it's helping me also just hearing the things that you're doing, breaking down stigma and helping power players process trauma. That's big. That's a game changer for folks.
Yeah. Thank you for that. And like I said, I'll commit to putting something together for the audience so they can get access to my twin, my AI twin. And I'd love, I'll send them off to you. So if you guys get just to be able to take everything that I've learned and everything that I've been through and pass it forward to help others get through stuff means a lot to me. It's really, to me, like you said at the beginning, my whole purpose was fighting bullies. Now I'm still doing it, but I'm doing it from love instead of violence. And that's such a huge gift to me to be able to turn my life from the violent side and the dark side into the light and helping people with connection. Because ultimately what I found is a fundamental thing. Every strategy we learn through trauma is a strategy of disconnection, disconnection from self, disconnection from others, disconnection from all that's greater than us. And the solution to all of that all the time is love and connection. And so every trauma is darkness. And as soon as you put the light of love into it, it goes away. And being able to interface with the world from that place of love as opposed to violence means a lot to me. So thank you for giving me a platform.
Yeah, thank you for joining me. Man, the three C's of my organization are community, connectedness, and companionship. And that's every bit of what you're putting out for into the universe, man. I appreciate you. Thank you so much for your time. It's been such a blessing having you on the podcast today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. All right, guys. Follow Larry on all of his links, buy his book, and catch Larry's AI. That's a wrap.